I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Ray Powell. He is the New Mexico Commissioner of Public Lands. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, thank you very much for the opportunity to visit with you and your listeners today on this beautiful fall day in New Mexico.
Indeed. So the New Mexico Commissioner of Public Lands, which is a title you held, it's an office that you held in the past, and you were reelected last year. What do you do? What does the land office do?
Well, Mary Charlotte, you're right. I was the land commissioner from 1993 through 2002, term limited out, went back to my veterinary practice. And over the last 5 years, I worked for Dr. Jane Goodall, the famed one of the world's top scientists. And I, through working with her, I met some of the world's experts. Her programs are in 140 countries around the globe on education, renewable energy, economic development, water issues. And through meeting some of those world experts, I decided, let's try these ideas back on state trust lands in New Mexico. And the land office is a very peculiar place in the sense that we look after 13 million acres of your and your listeners' public lands, and we generate revenues about $500 million a year to support our public schools, universities, and hospitals, and important institutions like Carrie Tingley Hospital for the developmentally challenged kids, the School for the Deaf, School for the Blind, the State Mental Hospital. These institutions are the very fabric of our state that really provide that safety net for the most vulnerable in the state, and the land office supplies $500 million for them. And our job at the land office is to take care of those lands, their working lands, while generating revenues so that they produce revenue and remain healthy for future generations.
Now, most of that revenue comes from oil and gas, doesn't it?
About 90% of it at this point comes from oil and gas, and we've been blessed with that, and it's helped educate virtually every child in New Mexico. The good news also is that we have as much in terms of potential income in decades to come from renewable energy.
How does that work?
Well, what we're finding is New Mexico has the ability to generate solar energy, wind energy, biomass, and geothermal at a par with, we think, these fossilized energies, oil, gas, coal, potash.
So instead of digging up the land or drilling into the land to get oil or gas out, you put solar panels and wind turbines on the land and still get money out of them?
And that's going to be the trick, and transmit that energy across state trust lands and charge for that transmission. The devil's always in the details, and while oil and gas is really important to our state, I just make two conditions, is they pay their fair share, every cent they owe, and that they take care of the health of the lands so that we're not ending up having to spend a large portion of that income cleaning things up.
Well, they're not exactly the cleanest industries, if I may say so.
Well, most of the problems that we're having now are ones that were inherited from the beginning of that industry. At this point in time, if all the rules and regulations are followed and the new technologies are utilized, it can be much safer than it was. But you have to have appropriate oversight and regulation of that. And as I say, when I'm at the land office, they need to pay their fair share. They need to take care of the health of those lands.
The famous Pitt Rule was passed during the Richardson administration. To what extent is that now actually being followed and therefore helping the groundwater not get contaminated?
Well, that's a real point of contention right now with the new administration. There's an Oil Conservation Commission. It's a three-member commission. Two members are appointed by the governor, and the state land commissioner appoints a person to that. And they are the ones that are now evaluating the Pitt Rule.
Is the Pitt Rule being followed? Has anybody lined their pits yet?
Well, I think during the last few years it was definitely followed, and the contention was whether this actually helped protect the land or whether it caused economic distress, which drove the industry off the land. I think the bottom line is, to me, is you've got to make sure that you're taking care of the health of the land. Because if we contaminate particularly our groundwater, then there's no life in New Mexico. So we have to be very, very scrupulous and very careful in terms of making sure that we don't contaminate our groundwater. It's bad enough when we contaminate the surface, but if we contaminate that groundwater, we're done here in New Mexico. So as we evaluate this pit rule and really look at it carefully, we cannot compromise the health and safety of our generation and future generations in terms of quality of water. And so from our standpoint at the land office, we're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that the groundwater is protected. As I said, oil and gas is important in terms of generating revenue to the state, but they've got to pay their fair share, and they've got to take care of the health of the land, which includes the health of that water.
The way that I'd like to see the economics of that is, what does it cost to line your pits versus what does it cost to treat a case of childhood leukemia?
Or to try and clean up water that causes that childhood leukemia, because
right.
It's so much less expensive to everybody, particularly those oil and gas companies. Just do it right from the beginning.
Right, right. The proverbial ounce of prevention.
Absolutely. And that goes not just for oil and gas, but any utilization of state trust land. We want to make sure that it's working land, it's the way it was set up in our Constitution, but that we be respectful of it and that we have it really in a healthy state so that all the inhabitants of that land, whether they have wings or four legs, or they slither on the ground, have a place that is a quality place that sustains them, because we're all tied together. We're starting a program we had initiated when I was there at the land office in the past called One Health. And we're teaming with different universities around the country and our local universities. And the bottom line is healthy plants, healthy animals, healthy people. We're not separate. We're
right.
All tied together. And it is such a complex system that when we start tinkering with it without knowledge, we end up creating just a cascade of negative impacts that we're going to pay the price, but more importantly, our kids, our grandkids, and future generations are going to pay.
What's an example of that?
Well, you know, here in New Mexico, we have different diseases, West Nile virus, plague, hantavirus, rabies. And when we alter the health of those natural systems, oftentimes those diseases spike, and we end up with the human-animal interface actually resulting in spikes of these diseases. So we really have to monitor the health of the other species, not just ignore them or abuse them, because if they're healthy, we're going to be healthy.
So what you're saying is, if I hear right, is that wildlife is less likely to get sick and spread diseases if they're living in a healthy ecosystem.
Oh, absolutely. And if the wildlife is healthy, we're going to be healthy.
And you, one of your initiatives is planting native trees, which is not only good for the water, but also other migrating species that nest, for example, birds that nest in those trees.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, many of us live now in urban environments. Even though we are a very open state, the vast majority of people in New Mexico live in just a couple of communities. And we've lost many times that connection with the natural world. But we can retain it and actually improve it by around our houses, rather than planting plants that are from Africa or Asia. They're nice big green plants. The reason none of the insects eat them is because they're not from here. And the key...
They're not our food.
They're not our food. And we've got to get back to planting native plants that actually have insects that eat them, because then the birds and the lizards and the toads eat those insects, and we again start building that food chain to a healthy ecosystem, so you have things that are eating the mosquitoes.
We're talking to New Mexico Land Commissioner Ray Powell. It's funny, when I go to, I've started doing a little bit more planting in my little yard, and when I go to the nursery, I always buy the flowers that have bees on them. Just for that reason.
That's exactly right. Because if you look at what we've planted around our homes, we've actually created very sterile zones where all of the migratory wildlife passing through has nothing to eat. And, you know, most of us love to watch birds and to watch wildlife. Well, to throw out the welcome mat, pull up those introductions from Africa and Asia, plant native plants. They use much less water. They're much healthier over the long term, and they provide that food for that wildlife that we all love to enjoy and watch.
So you were land commissioner some years back, you're land commissioner now. What are you doing the same as you did before? What are you doing differently?
Well, what we're doing before that got lost over the last 8 years when we've been gone is really having sunshine at the land office, because what makes the office peculiar in New Mexico is part of our enabling legislation. The land commissioner is written into that constitution. The land commissioner can sell the land, lease the land, or trade the land without anybody else's approval. So if there's not sunshine and public involvement, you can get into trouble real fast.
What do you mean by sunshine?
Well, what I mean by sunshine is just having public meetings. I made the commitment, because this didn't happen over the last 8 years, that any sale, trade, or lease, we go to the community or the locality that is involved at the very beginning of a proposal, talk to the community, and see if this makes sense. Every piece of land we hold is held for one of 22 beneficiaries, so we go and talk to the beneficiaries, too.
What do you mean by beneficiaries?
They're the ones that whatever money's earned off of that piece of land goes to support
institutions the school like for the deaf and so on.
School for the blind, Carrie Tingley Hospital, very important institutions. And if we don't do our job right, then we don't earn money off of that land. We cause irreparable damage to the health of the land, which we then have to put money in to get it healthy again, those important watersheds. But our taxpayers' bills go up.
Yeah.
So sunshine is just a matter of public involvement at the beginning of the process when it's important to get that public involvement, rather than trotting something out at the 11th hour that nobody can change.
Now, there was a land swap that I guess you reversed, the White Peaks land swap, when you came into office. What's the story of that?
Well, it was one of the motivations to run again. It's one of the most beautiful areas in the state of New Mexico, up in Mora and Colfax counties, and it's some of the best place to recreate, to hunt and fish. People have been using it for thousands of years because it is so productive and so beautiful. It's also an economic engine, Mary Charlotte, where we've got people coming from all over the country. They come, they want to recreate there, they bring their dollars, they buy gasoline, food, stay in motels. Well, over Christmas holidays 2 years ago, it got traded away. Without any sunshine, without any public involvement.
Is that, when you say sunshine, is like what other people call transparency?
Same thing.
Okay.
Same thing. Without public involvement. Because you can have transparency, but if you don't have public involvement, it doesn't mean much.
Right.
So it's a combination of public involvement and public participation.
Okay.
So the local communities that are going to be affected most have a voice in how trust lands are used.
So when something is done in secret over the Christmas holidays, that's, if I may say so, kind of a red flag.
It's a red flag, and it has a propensity to happen when people are trying to hide things.
Yeah.
And so this was a bad deal. We have an outstanding attorney general in the state that challenged it. I challenged it and went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, this shouldn't have happened. They reversed it. And I actually, it was one of four exchanges. I canceled the first week I was back at the land office, the other three exchanges with private landowners, because it wasn't in the best interest of the trust, the public, local communities. And we're in the process. We got the deeds back. People are back out recreating, hunting, and fishing on state trust land in that area. And that, once again, is in the public domain, and the public has access. But it almost vanished. And other parts of the state lost access to public lands because they were traded away, again, in my opinion, dead of night.
Traded for what?
Traded with other entities for other lands that weren't nearly as productive and that resulted in a decline in revenue for these important institutions. They were land swaps or land sales.
Now, you oversee, or the Office of Public Lands oversees millions and millions of acres. And we were talking about oil and gas before. What's your position on, for example, hydraulic fracturing? That's one of the ways of getting gas out of the ground, which is potentially so dangerous to the groundwater. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, and that's one of the issues we're faced with here in New Mexico in terms of the way we've siloed our ability to manage our lands. The agency that regulates that is in the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources. So we at the land office lease our land, and then another agency oversees the activities that occur on that land, which make it really hard over the long term to have sustainably healthy land. Because
so you can't impose conditions.
We can't impose conditions, but we can sure use the bully pulpit, and we're strongly doing that. And that is that, again, and I keep using this word sunshine, transparency, any sort of activity like fracking on state trust lands or any place else needs to be done with full disclosure. What are we pumping down there? What are the risks? How might it contaminate groundwater?
And how has it done so in these places? I mean, I've seen more than one documentary about hydraulic fracturing or fracking where people set they turn on their water faucet and they hold a match up to it and the whole thing lights up.
Well, and apparently, and again, I'm not a geologist or a hydrologist, but if it's been done here in New Mexico, fracking, I'm told, for the last 30 years, and if there's the appropriate geology, then your risk doesn't go away completely, but it's much reduced. If you don't use the appropriate techniques with the appropriate geology, you can get into trouble real fast. And as we talked about before, once you contaminate your groundwater, then it would cost exponentially more to try and clean it up, and you're just in real trouble. So again, this fracking business has to be looked at very, very carefully, and it has to have a full disclosure what we're pumping into the ground and what real risks are there. So this is a discussion that has to be held in public, not behind closed doors.
We're talking to New Mexico Commissioner of Public Lands, Ray Powell. So when you are looking at the big picture, New Mexico is a very big state. There's a lot of public land. You oversee a big chunk of these public trust lands. You need to get money out of them in the short run and the long run. Oil and gas are very important to the state. I have a gas stove. You know, I drive a car. We all do. Use these resources. But they will run out. That's an inevitability. It's like there's a pool, and when you drain the pool, there's nothing left. How do you see the long run? I mean, do you see former oil and gas lands being solar and wind lands? Or
Absolutely. But we have to invest, and I mean that, invest today for the future. This, many people look at it as an expense. It's an investment in our future. And right now, while we still have a lot of income coming in from oil and gas, we have to be investing in the renewable energies. And the real reality, there is no reason why we here in New Mexico can't lead the rest of the world, not only in production of renewable energies, but with our national laboratories and with our universities, we can lead the world in the technologies associated with them, which means, like Silicon Valley, we develop companies here in New Mexico that have that technological expertise, which New Mexicans can own, and then send our capable young people out across the world to apply those technologies, but have the checks come back to New Mexico.
Right.
That's not a pipe dream. We can do that if we have the will, the vision, and the motivation to really look seven generations ahead instead of one political cycle ahead.
Yeah, or a quarterly corporate profit cycle.
Exactly. We're doomed if we let that sort of corporate greed be what's driving us versus quality of life and looking at optimizing revenues from the trust over generations, not a boom and bust mentality.
Right. Now, how do you, I mean, is it a balancing act to I know you're interested in not only, I mean, you're a veterinarian, but you're particularly interested in wildlife veterinary medicine and have a very great interest in maintaining healthy ecosystems with wildlife on it. Is there a balancing act between, on the one hand, generating revenue from public land and, on the other hand, keeping wildlife ecosystems truly healthy and thriving?
Oh, absolutely. And again, it's how we prioritize things. And when we look at why most of us have chosen to live in New Mexico, it's because of the quality of life and the fact that we do have wildlife and that we can go out and view them and that we're part of that those systems, and we can go hike in the mountains and we can go fish and hunt or take pictures of birds or view butterflies. That's why we've chosen to live here.
And sometimes there's foxes in our yards and skunks and...
We are not different from the natural world. We are part of the natural world. And what's critically important is that, again, we reconnect with that natural world. And you bet, we have choices to make. Every choice you make has consequences. We've got to start looking at the big picture over a long period of time and ensure that future generations have not just as good of an experience as we've had, but hopefully a better one, because we have so much more knowledge now. And, you know, it's just inconceivable to me that we'd have New Mexico being just a big smokestack with no wildlife, no blue skies, no trees, because we have so severely neglected it or overused it. That's unacceptable.
And that is a real danger.
It's a danger if we don't use thoughtful purposes as we walk on that land and try and use as light a footprint as we can. So when we make our decisions, think about the short-term, mid-term, and particularly the long-term consequences.
The website for the Public Lands Office is nmstatelands.org. How can people get involved if they have opinions or thoughts or questions and they want to talk to somebody at the land office?
It would just give us a call, go to the website, and we have a number of lectures and activities at the land office. We have an auditorium there, and on our website we'll have scheduled events. People come over. But
there's a film coming up about wolves.
There is, at the end of this month.
We're going to do an interview on that.
And Elke Durer, who is the photographer and the person that's putting that film together, has a real passion for the natural world and for wolves. And we're really thrilled that she's going to premiere her movie at the land office.
And that's on the 28th of October at the land office. So we'll be giving more information about that. Ray Powell, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and people can go to nmstatelands.org, and I hope you come back again another time.
Mary Charlotte, again, thank you very much for the opportunity to visit with you and your listeners, and I invite you to come to the land office anytime along with your listeners. It's your public lands.
Thank you, and we'll see you soon. And by the way, the telephone number at the public lands office is 505-827-5760. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR.